I was too in love with him to think of anyone else.
Hello, my name's Kay Anderson, and you are listening to Lost Spaces, the podcast that mourns the death of queer nightlife. Every episode, I talk to a different person about a venue from their past, the memories that they created there, and the people that they used to know. Okay, I have a quick question for you. Have you ever fallen in love with your best friend? Because, spoiler alert, it's a terrible, terrible idea. Or at least it is for most people. Though I suppose it's not really something that you've got much control over. You don't really decide to fall in love with someone, do you? Anyway, my guest this week, singer-songwriter Benjamin Cole, happened to do just that, falling in love with his childhood friend, no less. And so by the time he managed to overcome that, process that, figure out that nothing was ever going to happen and he needed to move on, he was chomping at the bit to explore the queer scene. And it sounds to me, from our conversation, that he landed in just the right place, a welcoming bar in Valencia, Spain, which was called Central. So we got up to talk all about Central and why it was so important to him. And along the way, we also talked about the growing visibility of the bear community and what it's like to follow your passion. Let's get into it.
For me, a bear, the original concept, that's the one I identify with, it's someone who is attracted by guys that are not muscular or trying to be hot. Or it's more of a state of mind, actually. Along the years, the bear community is more accepting. Everybody is welcomed, even women. We don't care. We don't really...
I love that. Even women?
Yeah. Sorry, that may have sound.
So being a bear is a state of mind.
I think so. Nowadays, it's what I think.
And that state of mind is what?
For me, it's being open to any... I don't really judge people by their appearance. I have friends in different sizes, and I would never do a party where one type of guy couldn't get in. I wouldn't do that. That's my state of mind at this moment. I'm open to anyone who wants to share any experience without, you know, excluding anyone.
Yeah, so it's like that body positivity.
Yeah, that's a good word. I never use it, the body positivity thing, because in some way it's like admitting you have a problem. You know, you're like promoting something that's unhealthy and all that. And I'm the size I am, you can see my lab tests and they're perfect. I don't have any cholesterol high levels or anything. I can be like this and be healthy. And many people is like that. Others don't. Others take this too far, or, you know, there are many... Well, that's freedom. Many sides to this coin. My personal experience and my view of this is you don't have to be pressured of the way you look. You have more to offer, you know, as a person, or as what's here is more important.
Yeah, but...
We're also cuddly. That's another thing. Bears are cuddly.
Well, before we get on to the cuddling, I want to hear about the cuddling. It's really interesting that you brought this up about body positivity and that term being potentially problematic or being an indicator that reclamation is needed when maybe reclamation isn't needed. Mm. What would you use as an alternative?
You know, the other day I was talking with a straight friend. She's a lady. And we were talking about this labeling thing. And I was like, have you ever heard of anyone that comes into a party and says, hello, I'm Tom, I'm straight? It's not, no, that's stupid. It's like, but who cares?
Do you know people who go in and say, hello, I'm Tom, I'm gay?
Yes. Or really? Hey, this is Tom, he's gay.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, I've heard why? That
before. Yeah, yeah, it's like, hey, this is my friend Tom, and he's gay. And I'm like, why do I need to know that?
But is it like you two should be best friends because he's gay and you're gay?
Yeah, but what happens when it's another lady, for example, and they you're gay and she's straight? And it's like, that has happened to me with another lady that now is a good friend of mine. It was like, hey, this is Benjamin, and he's gay. He's a gay artist, you know? I'm like, okay, yeah, I eat dick and play the piano. So I think bear, since it's a stupid term, it's less problematic because there's not like a second possible meaning behind.
Yeah, it's not like subverting stigma. It is just what it is. It's not something. It is something. Is that what
it's
you mean?
It's something. And that's, yeah. And if you need a label, that could work.
But there's an element of hairiness that's involved to be a bear, isn't there?
No, not at all. No? There are hairy bears, but there are also hairless bears. Many chubby guys, they don't have any hair in their body. And that.
Are they not sea lions?
Yeah, maybe. You know, there are people into that kind of labeling, and there's plenty of that. They have labels for every aspect.
It's exhausting, but amazing.
Yeah. But it's exhausting if you need them. I don't really use them. I don't need them. For me, as I said, it's more a state of mind. So a bear could be someone thin or big or hairless, or even there are women that are now identifying as, well, mama bears and all that. I had a lesbian friend in Chueca, in Madrid. She was the bartender on one of the bars, and she was the hardest big guy I've ever seen. She was so hard, and I was like, how can you be a woman? It's like, you're too hot.
Okay, I'm sorry I keep asking questions about bearding.
No. Mm-hmm.
You've said you're not comfortable with labels, but you did start this conversation by introducing yourself as a bear.
No, it was a funny thing to do. I think it's easier to give you a parameter and then start the conversation from that. But it's not something I would say in my normal life.
Of course, the context. Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I find labels, it's such a confining yet helpful way of processing the world.
But the thing is, many people, I don't know, need them, or it's something that helps to put context to a conversation. That's why I was saying it's more of a state of mind, because it's not something that I really find necessary. But maybe it's like a short way of saying, hey, you won't fight here this kind of judgment or this other, I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm fascinated by the commodification of humanity that's happening at the moment, and that we're all in this position, well, not all of us, because some of us don't use social media, but those of us on social media, those of us on dating apps, those of us in any way putting ourselves out there into the world, we are trying to communicate as quickly as possible why we are valuable and what box you can expect to find us in. And I think that does really weird things to your self-perception, because you're limiting yourself in lots of ways, right? You're saying, I am this, therefore I am not this. And you're not open to the possibility of one day being the other thing.
Yeah, I think, you know, maybe those labels were an easy way of not losing time, you know, and getting to the point. And in some way, we all take for granted that we are more than a label, but that's a starting point. I see it like that. It's a starting point.
Yeah, but what I'm worried about is that somewhere along the line, we've forgotten that it is just a starting point, and we think that it should be representative of everything about our being.
Well, there's always people for everything, so there will be people that feel that way and others that will write outside the lines.
We need more of those people outside of the lines, I think.
Oh, yeah, we need that, but they will not be encouraged by Facebook or Google or anyone.
Mm. Okay, so we've gone a bit off topic. We were talking about bears, we were talking about beardom. I cut you off when you said that one of the most important parts of bear culture is cuddling.
Yeah, well, there are different types nowadays, but for me, I identify into the cuddling type of bear. There are bears that are closer to the leather scene, so they are more, I wouldn't say violent, but more tough and serious and, you know, dominant maybe, or in the other side, more passive or submissive or that. For me, I like my world to be kind, and I like kindness. And I think that that's a quality that some part of the bear spectrum allows me to experience with other guys and you know, and to be easier connected with that kind of sensibility. I think we need a lot of more kindness in this world because everything is too violent and too, you know, people are angry. And I understand that they have reasons to be angry and all that, but it's more of attitude towards life, you know? And giving a hug is something that doesn't cost money or time. It's a moment. and it can really change the day for another person. So that's something that I found more in the bear community than in, for example, the muscle community. I have friends in the muscular community, and I'm really sorry for them because it's a very tough community to be in. They are very judgmental, and everything is heightened in another way. It's another culture, another thing.
But you don't stand around hugging, do you?
Well, it's not like I'm hugging trees or people, unknown people in the streets.
No, but like if you go to a bar, are you just like, hey, let's have a hug?
Yeah, you could do that. The thing is, our community is not that big, and everybody, in some way, it's connected to others. And it's not strange that you get to a place and you get introduced and it's like, hello, hello, and you give a hug. It's
not even to strangers, though?
Well, if you get introduced, it's not a problem. Well, there are people that go to glory holes and they don't have any interaction.
That's different.
Yeah. Yeah, but
but so do you feel comfortable? I mean, this might be like my uptight Britishness like seeping through. But if I just meet someone for the first time and they go in for a hug, I feel like that's a lot.
I don't feel that way. But it's me. That's me.
So once again, the problem is me. Is that what you're saying?
No. That's your choice, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I just make the situation awkward by pulling a face and my body stiffens. Yeah.
No worries.
So we're here today to talk about Central.
Yes, that was the bear bar. It was not a. It was a small place. It was not very big, but you know the secret, the perfect thing about it. It was Kike, the owner, that was also one of the bartenders. He had this philosophy that anyone that came inside the bar, he would find out his name, he would talk with them, know what they were about. You know, why are you here? Are you from here? What are you looking for? And he will always introduce you to another person.
Aww. Who you would then hug.
Yes, for example. Or take your... if there's any chemistry, you could do more things, you know. But the thing is, he always was striving for those connections. He was always introducing you to people. And anyone that came into the bar, it was welcome that way.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So that's part of that philosophy I was telling you. Maybe he put that in my head, that everyone had to be comfortable at his bar. And he learned what you drank, and you didn't have to ask for anything. He invited you to the third drink. It was very welcoming. He was building a community. And that's something I loved about that place. Because in a year, I ended up meeting a lot of people, friendships that lasted.
Okay, so let's paint the picture a little. So you moved to Valencia in 1990 and you were in your early 20s. Mm-hmm. You'd just given up DJing. Mm-hmm. What was going on for you? Like, what was the plan? Like, why Valencia?
Yeah, I got into DJing because I wanted to do... I had always wanted to play piano. But my family couldn't pay for me to go to classes because it was far away from the little village we lived on. And it was expensive. So it was out of the question. But the moment an opportunity arose, I began to play music at friends' parties and all that. And that's why I was hired to a club, because they heard me on a party. They liked my taste and they just taught me how to DJ, you know, how to to put in sync vinyl and all that. Well, the thing is, by 1990, I had reached all my dreams as a DJ. You know, the dream club I had in my mind that was like a proto Ibiza big club. I was DJing there that summer and I was making a lot of obscene money. I also had a radio show that lasted all those years, like 7 years, 7 or 8 years. It was a national radio show and I was playing music and all that. But the thing is, I wanted to do music. And it was like something that was calling me. And I knew that if I kept DJing, I wouldn't be able to learn, to properly learn. So there was an opportunity for me to get into a studio, a recording studio in Barcelona as an apprentice. And I was like, I quit everything and I went to that studio. I was so hungry that in a month I was recording dialogues and I was learning my way through ADR and sound effects and all that. And then they opened another studio in Valencia and they sent me as the chief engineer there just like half a year later, because I was studying I was always very hands-on studying, and I was studying very hard. They sent me there, and I was working at that studio. I had an arrangement with the owner. He allowed me to use the studio for my own musical recordings from 10 p.m. to 3 a.m. in the morning. So I was working from 12 p.m. to 3 a.m. every day. And I was like that, also taking piano lessons and singing lessons and acting lessons. I was 3 years like that. It was like going to the military service, you know, because I was very obstinate. I wanted to learn. And when I felt I was ready, it was the afternoon, I told my friend, we need to go to a bar. We need to start living because it's been 3 years lockdown.
What? So you were in Valencia 3 years before you started going out on the scene? Wow.
Yeah, because I was studying. My only free time was 4 hours on Sunday afternoons that usually I spent in the beach. And I had another friend that was studying art in art school. He was a close friend. Well, he still is a close friend. And we shared those years of extensive training and work.
Wow, intense. Okay, so this next question is a bit crude and it's a bit of armchair psychology. Tell me I'm wrong. Please feel free. Don't humor me just because I'm asking it. But something that you mentioned before about growing up in the AIDS crisis and staying away from having sex and from really immersing yourself in the scene is lingering in my brain. And so the question is, did you throw yourself into your work to avoid intimacy?
No. The truth behind that, it's a mixed thing. It's not just one thing. I was in love with a schoolmate.
Oh, what was his name?
I will not say it. No, because he may... No. He's straight.
Hi, Pedro.
Yeah. No, it's not Pedro.
Just any but Spanish there was a Pedro. Sounding name I can come up with.
But there was a Pedro. He was very sexy. So.
Okay, but it's not Pedro. So it was no. Sebastian.
Yeah, well, I mean, that sounds so sophisticated. No, it. Well, I fell in love with a school friend. Mm-hmm. I was like 12 when I met him, but it never happened. But I was madly in love with the guy. Then there was a chance, I will always remember, this is like a movie, you know. Mm-hmm. One day, because we were best friends and we did everything together, and I was madly in love with him, but I was not invasive. I was not like telling him, hey, I'm in love with you, I want... No, I was very respectful mm-hmm. of his things and all that. So there was one day that I had been like DJing at a friend's party or something, and it was a Friday, I remember, and it was like six in the afternoon, and we were in the street walking, I don't know, maybe walking back home or something, and he was always very handsy, you know, maybe like grabbing me or mm-hmm. very... And someone came by us and told him... stop grabbing him, just call him your boyfriend already, and you know, like, and he was like, well, I might, and I'm like, I'm like, oh fuck, and he grabbed my hand and told me, after dinner I want to talk with you. I was like, fuck. Almost fainted. Well, we went for dinner, and in Spain, the newscast, you know, the news program in TV was always at 9 p.m. While you were having dinner, 9 p.m. news. So, and everybody saw those news because at that time we only had two channels in Spain, two TV channels. Mm-hmm. So the opening story was, there's a gay cancer. We don't know how it spreads. You could get it just by holding hands, kissing, drinking from the same glass. But anyone that's gay, it's in danger, and you could die tomorrow. It was, you know, end of the world news, like that.
Yeah.
So we finished dinner, and I was like, fuck. We met. He came by my house, and we met in the street, and he looked at me and said, well, I'm guessing we will not... be talking today about this.
Oh.
So I respect that, but I was like, I was too in love with him to think of anyone else. And it was like a platonic thing that kept going, become a habit, maybe. And we still talk. It's been a long time. And eventually, when I was in Valencia in 1992, I had a really open conversation about this. And I explained him everything. And I told him, I'm in love with you. And I can move on because you keep giving me false signals.
Wait. Okay, wait. 10 years?
Yes.
10 years. You mm-hmm. were holding out for this guy.
Yes.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was giving you like just enough for you to think that there was a chance.
Mm-hmm. But he was, you know, like grabbing you from hugging you or, you know, being there constantly or I don't know. I couldn't really be friends with anybody but him.
So why in all that time did you not initiate a conversation?
Because I was afraid. I was scared of losing him. I was scared of everything. I was in fear. I was living in fear about that. And then there was the AIDS thing. We didn't understand what it was about. And it was scary. And I don't know. Because on the other hand, I've always been a romantic. So that was a very romantic thing to do. I don't know.
Well, a romantic thing to do was to... pine after him, is that what you mean?
To be in love with the guy.
But would you call it love?
Yeah, at that time I called it love. I'm not really happy with myself about those years, but I didn't know better. I didn't have anyone.
And I'm really sorry if I'm coming across really judgmental in my questions.
No. It's okay.
So what happened then when you had that conversation?
He told me that he had thought about it, but he had a commitment with a girl, and he didn't want to betray that commitment. And the thing is, he stayed for a while at home with me. He came to Valencia and stayed at home. And he was, for a month, trying, forcing the situation, so it was me who took the first step, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He was like, and in fact, I already had my queer friend there, and he met him, and he was like, I don't like this guy. Because he wants you to take the first step. And then if anything goes wrong, to blame you about this. Mm. We were kids. So he was like, I'm going to take a shower. And he came from the shower in a towel and was like moving around, trying to make me take the towel off.
Yeah.
And I was like, that was the first moment of clarity I had when I told him, I'm not going to take your towel off. If you want to take your towel off, it's your towel, you take it off. And I'll be super happy. But I'm not going to be the one that takes it off.
And so this is the period where you had that conversation where he then said that he was like betrothed, but that's not the right word, that he was in a thing with a woman and that he couldn't pursue anything with you.
Yeah.
Did it stop then? Did these kind of shenanigans then stop, or did he keep behaving that way?
They softened. It was lower intensity thing. But then he was about to get married. He proposed to the... And then he came again. He came back and was like, I need a reason not to do this. I'm like, I'm not going to be the reason you're not doing this. And I was freaked out. But in any case, this was what precipitated that I told my friend, let's go to a bar and have a life, because this is not, this can't be it, you know? Because it was not healthy, not for me, not for anyone in that story. The thing is, he married. He ended up marrying the lady.
Oh.
And he wanted me to go to the wedding and said no. I went to the reception afterwards. I was for 10 minutes, and it's a fun story because it inspired a song that was one of my biggest hits in the 90s.
So treacherous. But okay. So then going to Central
was a liberation, was a choice of starting walking and saying, I need to learn what is it to be gay. And if there's a place for me...
Have you finished learning?
No. I'm very bad at it.
What are the key ingredients to being gay?
I don't know, sucking dick?
Maybe.
I don't know. No, I'm good on that subject, but there are others that escape me. No, but the thing is, I had been many years living in a strange world for me because everything was the other way around. You know, you went to a newspaper store and all the magazines were ladies without clothes, and I wanted a magazine with guys without clothes. And there weren't any on those stores, you know? It was like everything was in reverse. Mm-hmm. All the culture was straight. All the artists sang songs that were straight. Even Michael Jackson, poor thing, sang about ladies. And it was very... You felt like an outcast. So I just needed to find a place where there were more guys. I wouldn't have to be worried about his sexuality, you know? I think that's maybe why nowadays if there's, you know, that there are many guys that have a kick on converting straight guys and all that. I'm the other way around. If I have the minimum suspicion that the guy is, I'm not, bye. I'm not going to try anything.
So, okay. So we joked a little before about learning what it is to be gay.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to explore that more. Like how did that feel?
When I said let's go for it. I went for it. I didn't hold back. So when Kike began to tell me, you need to go to this place. Yeah, I'll go. You need to know what a dark room is. I'll go to the dark room. And I tried everything. But the good thing about that is I discovered what I did like and what I didn't like. I didn't deny myself any of the experience.
And this throwing yourself in at the deep end and just experiencing everything that you can experience, mm-hmm. I think that's a really good approach because it helps you very, very quickly like figure out what it is you like and what it is you don't like. But there's a risk that you do too
always
much,
rich.
Way too much. How did that play out for you?
I had music. And my focus was on that. And I experienced things and all that, but I didn't do anything that would harm my purpose of becoming a music producer. Or
yeah.
I had that objective in my life. And I also wanted to have a nice apartment. Or, you know, there were things that I was not going to sacrifice to going crazy. Mm-hmm. And I never got, tried different things, but I think I was responsible most of the time, you know, like trying to not ruin things for myself.
Oh, okay. So you didn't go too far in the deep end.
I did some stuff that was risky. I tried some stuff that was risky, and in fact, I had a big scare. I thought I got the bug in 1995 or something. There was a moment because I had another friend. Well, one thing that it's not very mentioned nowadays on gay series and everything, I had to take home two or three friends that were kicked out from their homes because they either got AIDS or said they were gay. And I had to take care of them. Back then, for example, another thing we are not saying is that all these friends, Kik and all that, I think they were living in the present because every week they were losing somebody. Mm-hmm. So there was something that some of them told you that was take care, be careful, use a condom. Mm-hmm. You don't want to catch this. And then there was the other story. There were other guys that said, man, you just live life and it's whatever happens. You had to do your choice, and my choice was, no, I want to stay healthy because I had that scare, and I was like, I don't want this for myself.
Mm-hmm. So in dipping your toe into the water, into embracing the scene, into exploring your sexuality, what did it feel like, and I'm making an assumption here, what did it feel like to have attraction properly reciprocated?
Okay, this is fun. This is a good question because it took me a long time to hook up with someone I really liked. I spent years going with people I didn't quite... They were not my real type. I enjoyed the experiences and all that, but it was not that easy to find, you know, big guys back then. Maybe I wasn't in the right place because my friends were more into the leather scene and all that. I don't know. But it was not an easy thing. So I settled for different guys. It took me a long time to really find places where there were people that I really could fantasize about and could really... But it took me some time, and it was wonderful.
And that's because the bear scene wasn't as developed then, or
yes, and these guys were just not going out because they were worried they will not be accepted at the places or the clubs or be looked down or didn't have the clothes or you know. Another thing to have in mind is nowadays you can go any way to anywhere, but in that moment it was still many places it still had that 80s thing about you had to go with a certain look and you couldn't like go with sneakers or even denim. Awful. Denim was forbidden in the 80s. You could not get inside a disco, a proper club, with denim or sneakers. That was forbidden.
I would never leave the house.
Well, maybe if you were there...
I'd have chinos on.
No, but it was the moment. The moment called for that. There was always like a false elegance thing going on, you know, like a costumey.
Yeah, flouncy shirt. I'm really fascinated by this and I want to ask some follow-up questions. Mm-hmm. How did it feel then to finally have that experience?
Awesome. It was wonderful. It was like, oh my God. I remember, and this was Pedro. This was Pedro.
Oh gosh. I'm not sure if that's a good sign or a bad sign that me spouting off stereotypically Spanish names has ended in a successful batch.
No, it's a good sign. No. Well, maybe you could also do a psychic podcast. But no, it was in 1997, I think. I moved to Madrid. And there was a Sunday, a tea dance in Madrid, mm-hmm. that was very popular at that time, the Shanghai tea dance. And I became part of that scene. But the thing is, the place was very popular, so everybody that came to Madrid from anywhere, they went to that party because it was the place to be. Mm-hmm. And one day, a big guy comes from Barcelona, and all the waiters saw this guy and sent the message, "There's a chubby guy in the club, there's a chubby guy! Call him! He needs to go there and hook up with him." It was like our system, because the Shanghai tea dance was more a place of skinny guys and muscular types and all that. It was not like... But this one was there, I don't know why. And the waiters was, "Do you want a beer? Stay here, we have a friend." And we end up meeting. And I remember when I saw him, like in the movies, my legs began to shiver. I was like trembling.
Oh.
Yeah, it was, oh my God, I will remember that forever. Every time I saw him, I felt weak in my legs. I was like, I'm going to fall into the ground, because he was so cute. And I'm like, oh. And I was like convinced he didn't like me. You know, it's like, no, it's impossible. He wouldn't. Because I still have that to this day. I always think they don't like me or they hate me. If somebody is looking at me at a bar, I think he wants to hit me or something. It always takes a lot of help from my friends to say, no, he's into you. So we hook up and it was wonderful. And it was the first time, and I will always remember that, because it was like, this is unbelievable.
Well, okay, so I'm quite interested in this network of waiters that you have acting as your pimp. How did this happen? Did you tell everyone, like, be on the lookout for me?
No, the thing is, I was a strange bird. The DJ, whom I began to do remixes with, mm-hmm. he told everybody, after every night, we all met up staff and all that, and friends. And he told them, he likes big guys. He's not interested in you, because they were very... And for example, there was a guy that was... Everybody was wanted to be with him. He was like muscular and handsome by the book. And I was like, I would never anything with you. It's like not happening. And they were like, they couldn't believe that. They were like, oh my God, it's impossible that you don't like this guy. No, I don't like this guy. And what do you like? I like bigger guys. How? How is that? and yes, I like bigger. So it was like, for them, it was like a fun thing. It was like, psh, a guy that doesn't like hot guys. So that's why they all knew. And the moment they saw another big guy, they were like, hey.
Okay, so we've somehow ended up in Madrid. Let's go back to Valencia and let's go back to Central. Why was that the club that you wanted to talk about today?
because it's the place where I set the foundation of who I am today. Many things happened there that define me as a person in the years to come. For example, I had my gay dads. I met them in that place or through that place. And they were very important to me. They made me feel special. I don't know, it was the first time in my life somebody made me feel special. And Kike taught me what the ideal place of encounter should be. You know, the ideal place where you meet with other people with similar tastes and like you. Mm. I don't know. I learned to interact. I learned a lot of things there.
So, okay, to finish us off, let's stay in that world. Let's stay in the Valencia of the early 90s when you were at a point in your life where you were like, okay, I need to go out. I need to start like experiencing this thing out there, this queer scene. If you could give that version of yourself a piece of advice, what would you say?
Don't be afraid. I think that's the most important. Second would be enjoy. Enjoy the moment, enjoy the present. But the first would be don't be afraid.
Do you think you're not afraid now?
I'm less afraid. Much less. Not completely over it, because it seems to be part of my building blocks, but I'm much less dominated by fear, or my motivations are other nowadays. They're different.
Yeah, it's kind of like, how can you make that fear work for you, right? Because fear is part of the human condition. Well, maybe not for everyone, but it's there. How can you use it to fuel you?
Yeah, in the end, I think it's about giving everything the power they need to have and not more. Mm-hmm. It's good to have a right amount of fear, but you cannot let fear dictate your choices.
Mm. I think I am probably not patient enough with myself when I feel that fear. And rather than just being like, okay, I need to sit with this, or I need to move through this and experience this, I just chastise myself for being a wimp.
I've been like that. I spent years in that space. But I don't know, maybe it was losing friends or something that put, you know, it's like, no, I can't let this happen. It made me realize that this can be the last day you're here, so... And you never know. I just lost another friend three weeks ago from a heart attack.
Shit. Oh, shit.
Yeah, and he was perfectly... He's the designer of the latest cover. He had a heart attack, and that's it. And it's like, can't believe he's not here, but he's not. So maybe that I've learned to use bad stuff in my life to propel me in the other way, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to fall down. I'll go forward.
Yeah.
You know?
Let's go forward. Do you have any memories of Central, or maybe clubbing from your own queer scene, that you want to share? Well, if you do, why not get in touch? I want to create the biggest online record of people's memories and stories of queer clubbing, but I need your help. Go to lostspacespodcast.com, find the section Share a Lost Space, and then tell me all about what it is you got up to. Or you could also reach out to me on Facebook or Instagram, where my handle is Lost Spaces Pod. whilst you're rooting around on the internet, why not find out more about Benjamin by visiting his website, benjamincole.com, or you can follow him on his socials on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube, and I'll make sure that I will include the links in the show notes for this episode. Oh, I just realized I called it Twitter. I shouldn't have called it Twitter. I meant X. You know what I meant. If you enjoyed this episode, I would really appreciate if you took the time to subscribe, leave a review on your podcast platform, or just tell other people who you think might be interested in giving it a little listen too. My name's Kay Anderson, and you are listening to Lost Spaces.